welcome.
Julian, it's all yours.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Hi. Julie with DevNet.
Tim Hatch, Deputy Assessor.
Hi, Tim. Nice to see you. Your face looks familiar, so maybe I've seen you at the meetings. And Sheila looks familiar also. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Just fine. We're going to see you next month.
You are going to see me next month. Julie with DevNet. Thank you so much for the invitation to be here, Tim.
Okay. I'll start. First of all, if there are things that you particularly want to see, stop me. You know, I get on a roll.
Well, the biggest thing that we ran across, at least I had some challenges, was just the reporting. I would like to see a good way to pull reports, customize reports besides the standard reports. I know if you don't know about our system, it's a homegrown system that's grown with time. And Melissa, who normally is the database administrator, she's out today in medical. Otherwise, she would have been in this meeting. And then obviously, we want to make whatever we're doing here is make sure that the collector and the assessors are on board 100% with what we're doing and what we're trying to do. For me, the biggest thing for me initially was the reporting-wise, making sure we can query reports on a lot of different criteria. So.
Okay. Reporting, of course, comes from all of the modules, and let me just give you a brief overview. Probably most of you that know me have seen this several times at conferences, but just to give you a brief overview, it's a Windows-based solution. It was written for Windows from the ground floor up. It uses SQL Server as our database, very easily queryable if you have things like Crystal Reports or you have somebody on staff that knows SQL. So even if there are things that we don't already have in the system with third-party tools, you can query on any part of the data that you need to.
Okay.
And because it is SQL, it is an open environment, so therefore you don't need us in order to extract the data from your own database, and the data is yours. We're not in the habit of sharing county data with other people, other vendors, mortgage companies, things of that nature. They need to go through you to get that. Although we do have a lot of clients that have a lot of requests for that data.
Is it MSQL?
It is. It is SQL. So
it runs
on the full-blown version of SQL. So whatever the latest version of that is, I don't know if it's 7 or 8. I can't keep up with it these days, but anyway, it runs on the full version of SQL. Okay. Right now we have 10 clients in Missouri, and the largest of those is Buchanan, who is probably similar in size to you, I would say. The system is modular in design, meaning each office has its own executable, if you will. And that executable is driven, it is client-server. So you've got one executable, it resides on the server, you download that executable, make it available to all the users, you don't have to touch every desktop every time we do an update. Okay? We do send regular updates to the software. In the states where we have an existing system and we're not on ongoing updating things for a new state, we do at least a monthly build, sometimes more often than that. It depends on what people are waiting on and what functionality we're adding to the system. That being said, when we send out an executable, there's a README file with it. It will come to you as an email to everybody you put on the distribution list. Jim and Sheila and James and whoever else needs to know. Gary. And it will say, there's a new version of the Missouri Assessor or the new version of Missouri Collector available. And here's what's in that update. Every build that we send you is a full build. So if you skip one, you don't have to worry about, oh my gosh, do I need to go back and update something along the way. It's flexible enough that lets you use the cost tables you want to use for CAMA. It comes with a variety of things already built in. We have our own cost manual available, but you can also use Honeycutt, you can use Marshall and Swift, you can use a combination of those cost tables in whatever manner you like. You can build your own cost tables if you want to. Those tables can be factored. Personal property tables can also be factored for your non-vehicle table. So the manual personal property can be factored on an annual basis. We do get an electronic copy of the updated file for personal property every year that is handed out to all the counties for the assessors. And we upload that as a file to them. If you want to manually key those in, you can, but certainly you don't have to do that. It is an electronic file. We'll update it for you. So I really have 3 or 4 pieces here that I want to show you today under Missouri property tax. I'm going to start out with the inquiry here. And I believe that a lot of the things that you guys look for or that you would want to run, you might be able to find here. I apologize for the resolution on this. I'm going to have to scroll around a little bit on the screen so that you can see all the real estate. But basically what you've got here is a series of tabs on the left, and you've got some check boxes up here in the right, which let you do single property searches on things like real estate parcels only, but you can also search for just personal property, or you can do a combination of real and personal at the same time. And you've got some things here. Defaults are already set, active properties, everything that gets a bill this year. But if you bring up a result set and the list has red or blue text or green text, you can see what those are. Are they state assessed or exempt from taxation? That type of thing.
I should take time to get my glasses. I was in another room and I didn't realize the meeting was going. It may tell me if I can see it. Can you search by a physical address?
You can. One of the tabs that I'm going to walk you through here on the left is you can search by ownership name. You can also search by any other name. It can be combined. And if you want to grab a chair and pull up here next to me, that works for me. Whatever works for you.
Walk out the office.
Okay.
Maybe my cost.
Site address?
I'm forever sitting at this.
That's fine. Site address of the property. And just so you know, you can combine the query across these tabs. So if you want to search for name and site address and personal property and other things, you can combine it into one query. So a name search, any name. Site address, any city, any street name within that city. So maybe you're looking for all the cherry streets in Forsyth, for example. Here's an example of property use or township. I want to look for everything in the county. I want to look for just certain land uses. The land use table is definable by county. It's definable by you. So whatever land uses you have that you want to identify and be able to drill down into data by, that's what goes in the land use table. Personal property search for things by item, if you like. And you can search by the exact description of that item or not. Well, that's what this is for. Okay. Sale search. Maybe I'm looking for properties that have sold in a certain time frame, a certain sale price range, certain type of document. Is it a valid sale, yes or no? The neighborhoods. So neighborhoods being for indexing studies, sales ratio studies, what neighborhood is this in? These are defined by you also. So this is Buchanan's database that we're looking at here. They actually define theirs by number. Also, search legal descriptions. This version has just the free form legal. So if you always have section, township, and range on the first line of your legal and you want to search by that, you can type in on the first line section, township, and range. When I get into the actual details of the system, I'll be able to show you one of the things you can do here. They don't have segmented legal descriptions, but you can have segmented legal descriptions. And then once you define what it is that you're looking for, a search result comes up. So I'm going to reset this. I'm going to go in and search for a certain property by name. Brings up a result set. I can see this list. It matched a last name that I was looking for. This result set I can see in owner address order, site address order, or a detail window, which shows me some basic detail. There are six fields at the bottom of this. This is your inquiry screen. This is customizable by you. You tell us what six pieces of information are the ones most requested when somebody calls you on the phone, so that when you search on something, you don't even have to go into the application to find the answer to those things. So it could be here in this window, I've got the parcel detail. And again, this looks very different when you can see the whole screen. You don't have these scroll bars that are going back and forth here that you see. When I find what I'm looking for, I simply double-click on it from this list. And it goes into the inquiry program. This is normally what people have set up on their desktops, either in offices that inquire on the data but don't maintain it on a daily basis, the public view workstations that you may have set up in your offices if you have any of those. And then a version of this is also available for us to post on the web. You can host it yourselves. We will host it for you. There's a different price depending on which way you want to do it. But that is the wedge in the folder that I didn't give you guys a folder. In the folder, there's a handout for something called wedge.
And it's the web inquiry. Okay, so online web inquiry.
Okay, once you get in here, you can see that, again, there are 9 sections in here on this window, which you can't see all of right here, but the parcel detail, an overview of the property itself, here's an assessment overview, the tax rates that this parcel pays into, and the taxing districts. This is this year's current year, so there's no tax rate yet. 2 things that are very important here. 1, if I want to see this parcel's history, I simply scroll down through the years that this parcel has been in our system. And so it'll go back. Sorry, this takes a little bit. It's loading the property record card. So I can go back and see the history of this parcel. I can see what they paid, what the amount of their bill was, what taxing districts they were in, what their assessment was, and this changes dynamically as I scroll up and down through the years. Also, if I want to jump to the next parcel or down a parcel, that's what this does. So up to the next parcel, down to the previous parcel. There is no separate history file in our system. It is all year driven. So multiple years are stored in the same database. Every year just adds another column. All of the history then that you want to look at in prior years, everything you can view in a current year, you can view in a previous year. All the reports that you ran in a current year, you can run out of previous year data. And all of the queries that you want to do, you can run on both current year and previous years. You don't have to leave here to look at historical data. These 9 sections here each have a tab. This tab, if it's green, means there's something there to look at. You can drill down into the data and see more detail of assessments, for example. So here's the history of this year's assessment. It's going to take me a little bit to get used to scrolling around here. If there's an agriculture, if this is an ag parcel, I've got ag values and acres and so forth here on this parcel. I can scroll down then and see the value broken down by your 3 value buckets in Missouri, agricultural, commercial, residential. There's a reason for change tied to each one of these. I think you can have up to 3. I don't know. I believe it prints those on your change notice if you need to send out a change of assessment notice. We also had the forest cropland values. So if you have forest cropland, this acreage should be included in what's up here. But we do that. We separate that out so that the reports can be generated for you that need to be generated for the state. Just walk through these pretty quick. Images here. Okay, well, this looks bad, but it's because it's a picture that I scraped off of the web. This came from a real estate listing, and they had a lot of pictures that the assessor didn't have, so I copied and pasted them out of their listing, their real estate listing, onto the parcel. Just as an example to show you what you can do with images. This was an imported image. I have a legal description here, and this is what I was talking to you about. Here, this is a free form legal. But if I had a platted tract with section, township, and range, or unplatted, I would see either subdivision name, which is here, or platted, unplatted by section, township, and range. If we had that function turned on in the inquiry, you would also be able to search the same way. You'd be able to search by platted, you'd be able to search by unplatted. You can have an unlimited number of names on a parcel. And the name can be the owner, it can be somebody's daughter, it can be an interested party, it can be a mortgage company. So not only do we allow you to attach names to a parcel, but also create the relationship list. What is this name to the parcel? And then what is this name to the others? And then with each name, you've got document information. So this is optional. You don't have to keep track of the type of deed that created this name record. Well, most people find this very helpful because then the next time a deed comes through and it was a partial interest, for example, I don't have to go back and look it up again to see what they owned.
You know, on the assessor's side, you're putting the mortgage company's name on the deed.
It's up to you. We have different clients that do it in different ways, Sheila. Some of them are comfortable having the one office makes all the name changes, whether it be a mail-to name for a bill, or a change notice, or an ownership from a deed. Some clients, that's not the case. The ownership names are maintained in the assessor's office, the tax billing names are maintained in the treasurer's or collector's office, And then the mailing flags that pertain to your names, those are the ones you can edit. It's all driven on security. So however you want us to set it up here, you can change names if you need to. They can change names if they need to.
I'm just thinking the labor intensity and responsibility. If they put a mortgage company's name on, they're also going to have to keep track of a deed of trust release. And
absolutely. And so some people want to do that, and some people don't. If you want to do that, you can. The system has enough flexibility to do that. As far as the billing is concerned for names such as that, a lot of the lending companies now, like let's take First American Real Estate, for example. I don't know if they ask you for a full file or not so that they can pay you with one check everything that comes to them. We have a lot of clients that do that. So they'll take a full file and they'll send it electronically to First American. First American goes through that file, marks off the ones that they want to pay you, and sends that back to you with a check. The check, whether ACH funds, we can handle that. Paper check, handle that. However they want to send the funds to you. We upload that as a batch. Comes from First American. When we upload that batch, it marks those as paid by First American so everybody knows where it came from. If there's a mismatch between what the system says is due for all those parcels and what is really due, what they thought was due, it will, as it brings in each payment, it'll mark it. Yes, this one's okay, green check mark. No, this one's not okay, red circle with the hash mark through it. This one you have to look at. There's something wrong with this parcel. So they thought it was 2,000, your system says 1,500, why?
So to kick it out.
Exactly. And then you can look at each one of those that doesn't balance and figure out what you need to do to make it balance. Okay? A lot of times it's because you posted a correction. There's been a correction on something.
Or they got on the wrong parcel.
Lots of stuff. But you can go through and look at those. Okay? So we keep the history of the ownership here by year. So again, all of the history is here. I can also look at what I would call alternate names if there were any that are outside of owners, just alternate. I can look at just the history. I can look at just the alternate history. I can look at all. It defaults to all. We can default it to whatever you like. There are some things here that I didn't talk about. Drainage here, if you have drainage, also maybe NID, CID. Anything that's special that falls outside of ad valorem taxes, we can still handle that and do handle those for many of our clients. Genealogy gets built if you use our parcel transfer routine in the assessor's office. Every time a parcel gets divided, parent parcel maybe gets retired. Sometimes some offices do retire the parent numbers, some don't. Okay. We have the remainder parcel option where one of the children stays, is the remainder parcel. And when you create new children from that original parcel number, those children, the genealogy gets built here automatically. So I'm going to know what parcel number it was and what parcel numbers were split from that parcel so you can follow its family tree all the way back to where the parcel started. And our system does that for them automatically when they use the parcel transfer routine. They don't. Now, if you want to come into this window and key them in by hand, you can. If you choose not to use the parcel transfer routine, but you want to track the genealogy of the parcels, you can do that by adding them manually. Multiple images, multiple types of images, we can talk more about that in a little bit. The option is here if you want to use the building permit and zoning portion of the software. I don't have a permit on this one, and this is inquiry, so I can't add one here, but I will be able to in a little while if you wanted to see how permits work. Again, we keep a list, a historical list of all the building permits that have been issued on a parcel. That source can be the county's data, but can also come from municipalities. If they have, maybe it's the city of Branson or Forsyth or somebody else that issues the building permit, not the county. We can import those permits from elsewhere if that's what you want to do. Sales history is stored forever on a parcel, so we'll just keep a list of all the sales. I'll go in later on a parcel that actually has some sales history. Site addresses here, you can have multiple site addresses on the same parcel. So if this is an apartment building or a strip mall or something that has multiple units on the same physical parcel number, they might have multiple emergency responder addresses there, so you may want to track multiple site addresses per parcel. If you go in and search on any one of those site addresses, it will bring up that same parcel. Sketches, don't have one on this parcel, a tax bill. I bet if I go to a prior year. We keep a snapshot view of the tax bill forever. You can always go back and reprint that tax bill. Some of our clients print them on plain white paper with perforated stubs at the bottom. Some of them use a pre-printed form. We fill in the box. Either way works for us. What you see here is an example, and I think I gave you an example or two in the packet that I handed you, of different kinds of bills, personal property bills, real estate bills, delinquent bills. Notice this says tax bill 1 of 1 and duplicate. The original bill doesn't have any of that on it. Anytime you do a reprint, it's going to say duplicate. Some people charge for those. It's up to you. Don't have to.
If, can I ask you, Julie?
Absolutely.
I'm thinking about something else when you're... The tabs on your left...
Tabs on the left.
Are those customizable?
Yes. We can move them around. We can change the order.
Can we create one?
We can. You cannot.
Okay.
We can. You may see that there are tabs here that you don't need. And if there are tabs that you do need that we don't have, tell us. Just because you don't see it doesn't mean we don't have it.
And assessor software. Let me just throw... We have a challenge sometimes to think about nuisance cases that are tied to property addresses. Mm-hmm. If we had a process in which we could, a common database of addresses, I see the permits for P&Z.
Yep.
But if there was a complaint from a nuisance perspective or something like that.
Like weeds.
Well, when we set out, if there's a
vehicles.
Nuisance. Yeah, vehicles. We make some letters that maybe refer to the prosecuting attorney. Just from an aspect of a common database of all pertinent data, county-based data tied to an address.
Yeah. And our permit system already handles certain types of nuisances,
okay,
like weeds that need to be cut down, vehicles are parked in the yard, that kind of thing. Things that our clients have already asked us to add.
Okay.
Certainly we could add more categories to permits if you want to use that.
Okay. That's all.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
That weeds, I've got a city that's wanting me to collect their weed cutting and their traffic tickets. You do that where do you do that at?
We don't do it in Missouri. I don't think we have anybody that's actually using that. But in Wisconsin and some of our municipalities, they actually do that. So if they charge someone, we generate a notice out of the system. And they attach that to the right parcel. And then we generate those letters.
I need to talk to commissions, but they've got a statute. Where it says requiring, shall. You attach it to what? Now, the statute says create a collection bill that the collector collects, but are you attaching it to a real estate or personal property bill?
Don't have to do either one. Can do a separate bill. They choose to put it on their real estate bill. But we don't have to do that. I mean, when we do specials in some states. They send a separate bill for their specials than they do for their real estate. We can combine those onto one bill if you want to, and everything is kept separately. The titles on the bill, the category, let me go back to the tax bill. The categories that you see here, those specials show separately, and you keep that money in a separate bucket.
But you could create a separate invoice.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what you're asking, right?
Could
we create a separate one from the database? And
The statute refers to a separate bill, but I know they want it attached to it.
Yeah, okay. And that's fine. We could certainly do the same.
Yeah, because you won't have any fine to collect a separate bill.
Right.
Yeah. And we also have some states where they may attach it to the same bill and show it as a separate line item, but they can be paid separately. So like if a taxpayer comes in with this bill and it's barcoded at the top and they scan that and they say, all I want to pay today is my special, or all I want to pay today is my weed, they can do that. Our system will allow you to do that. It's a setting, it's a code setting behind the scenes. So our system, unlike some other systems that are out there, is not one size fits all. So just because they do it that way in Wisconsin doesn't mean that you have to do it that way in Missouri. So if you wanted to collect it all and force the system to collect it all, then that's the rule that's set up in the background. When they come in, they've got to pay it all or nothing.
On any part of the bill?
Our system will allow you to take a dollar a day if you want to take a dollar a day.
Why, if they don't pay it, then what happens to the money?
They, it depends on your state rules, obviously.
It has to go back to the customer, and then, but if you correct. Do it that way, you've already dispersed it to your entities.
That's correct.
You get the money back from there.
That's correct.
I'm sorry.
Okay. And in some states, Sheila, they sell the whole property. If $1 is unpaid, they sell the whole, the lien is on the whole property.
Mm-hmm. But you've refunded back the amount they pay.
Some states, all they're doing, though, is they're putting a lien on the property for the unpaid tax. So there's a difference. In some states, they're going after the whole property. In the other, they just want the unpaid taxes. So, and you can go after the unpaid taxes for 2 or 3 years until certain rules are met, and then they sell it. So it just depends.
I don't believe our statutes would allow that.
Yeah, and it's up to you. It's just flexible enough to let you do that. So we do things like monthly payment plans if people want to set that up, and we can ACH transfer the money out of their checking account or savings account if you want to do that. So the partial payment is up to you.
We do that, but you're not allowed to disperse it to the entities because then you'd have to get it back if the customer doesn't match.
Sure.
The statute writes it that way.
Okay. So the tax bill here, if you had a corrected bill, something was missed, something was incorrect, the value was incorrect, you went in and you corrected that amount. Now there's a corrected amount due. You would see the original bill, but you'd also see the corrected bill. So you could reprint whichever one you want. Regardless of which bill they have in their hand, when they come to your counter to pay and you scan the barcode, the system knows what's due. And it's going to come up and say, regardless of what their bill says, they only owe you $1,000. So if they've already got their check written out for $1,500, you can say, okay, I can't take this. I need you to rewrite it. Or you can take it and issue a $500 refund to them, however internally you want to handle that. More likely, they're going to send it to you in the mail. And if it's incorrect, then you have to figure out what do you want to do with it. Some counties will take the full payment of $1,500 and issue the $500 refund. So it's up to you how you want to do that. But we'd store a snapshot view of the bill so that you can go back and reproduce a bill upon demand anytime in the future, any day. It can be set up to reprint on an inquiry station if you choose or not. If you don't want them to be able to reprint a tax bill because you charge them for that, then we just disable that feature and they can't print it from here. A history of tax payments is also kept. You do one installment in Missouri, we do two installments or multiples in other states. We show you a summary broken down by installment, what batch it was paid in, who paid it, the detail, whether or not it was distributed to the taxing districts, and when it was distributed. And also a historical view of all the taxes due on a property. This happens to be real estate. If I wanted to look at personal, I could look at personal also. Also tax rates. So here's a summary of the tax districts they pay into, what the rate is for each one of them, the aggregate overall rate for this parcel, and the amount of tax. Notice that in the upper right, I have a tax code breakdown. So this is their description. I have no idea what some of this means. St. Joe, I'm sure. So I don't know if it's St. Joe City, St. Joe School, St. Joe something else, but these descriptions are by you. So the tax code number and the description that you've already got in your system, we would just convert those and you would continue to move forward using those same titles. A time memo is a note that you can attach to a parcel triggered into the future. Somebody calls you today and says, I'm tearing down a building. I need to go out and look at it January 1st because that's my new year. I'm going to make a note to myself to say on January 2nd I want to go out and check it. I would attach a time memo to this parcel. On January 2nd I log into the system. It comes up and reminds me that I need to do that. Time memo was attached to mobile homes. It's attached to personal property. It's attached to collection, attached to assessor.
The reminding mechanism within this application, not an external, not like Outlook or like that.
That the time memo is something internal, something we built. Yep. Data collection is just that. This feature was something requested originally by our Missouri assessors because they're, at the time we built this, they were the only one of our assessors that actually go out and do the work. In Illinois, I was the county assessor, but I wasn't the person who actually did the assessments. We had township assessors who were elected to do the work. So this data collection is pretty basic here. If there's been someone out in the field, you would see who the information came from. If you've got like an income producing property, the information come from the owner or manager of a property. It opens up this field and you can key in here what you like. who gathered the data, what classification it is, which way is north. That was important. Shows on your property record card. I gave you some samples in the packet that I gave you. Building cost is where we actually show the calculation from whatever costing manual you're using. This changes depending upon which cost manual you're using. So when we get into the assessor part, I'll just give you a brief overview of how this looks. If we were using Marshall and Swift residential cost, you would see a green flag here. We're not. And they're also not using Marshall and Swift commercial and agricultural, but you do have that as an option. Land cost, again, you can have multiple types of land on the same parcel, farm, residential, commercial, and each one of them can have multiple entries here and multiple values. At the bottom, I've got the lot acreage broken down by some things that mean something to the assessor's office. If this was an income-producing property and I had an income study here, you would see an income study here. So how many apartments do I have? And, you know, so we've got the income sheet, and then we've got the miscellaneous income and expense sheet, and it actually calculates net operating income for you and gives you a value based upon the income approach. I have a tab turned on here for the ACH payment plan. So if we actually have a payment plan set up for this parcel, I would see all the information regarding their ACH and so forth. The total value tab is a way for us to reconcile value from all of its sources for real estate. So I can have a building cost value, I can do a sales comparison value, and I could have an income value if it's commercial. I can also have building income. So I could see all of the approaches here. I can reconcile on this page. I can checkbox the one that I want to use. And then that one from that, I can generate an assessment. One thing that our system does for the assessor's office, it allows you to value property from a multitude of sources, also work into the future, and not create an assessment from it until they're ready to actually change the assessed value. So if I want to work on a reassessment and I want to work 2 years into the future, you can do that. Just go in and start entering values on new cost tables, save those values here on this tab, and then when you're ready to, you can either go in one at a time and change a value under like Board of Review if it were Board of Revision, or I can go in as a mass process and update all of those from that. And then I have the World Wide Web attached here. I've got a tab for you to go live to the internet from within a parcel. This happens to be in the inquiry, and I'm going to show you how to do this from within parcel maintenance here just real quickly. But you get an idea that the tabs that you show here to the public view, these are customizable. We can show the ones you want to show. We can only show certain data. So if you don't want to show the names tab, I don't want people to be able to go in and see ownership, we can redact that information and you just don't show it. And it's not that the tab becomes red and disabled. The tab just disappears. So taxpayers don't get upset because they think you have information that you're not showing them. We just don't show the tab, period. So that's our inquiry. Let me close this and reset this. And let's check on both real and personal. I'm going to search for Mr. Thettinger again. Okay, now I can look at my personal property. This is just an overview of my personal property information. Again, just some information here which you guys would do as you were adding a new account. Do you want to waive the penalty, yes or no, in this particular one, the waiver reason. Again, multiple names, but normally it's just one name because you're dealing with vehicles, typically. So all of your vehicles, all of your items appear in the upper part. The actual item list, the detail, appears in this part. Again, your payment history, the tax rate or taxing districts it pays into, additions and abatements, any notes that you might have made, site address of the parcel, if this is maybe livestock or combines or tractors and you want to attach it to a particular parcel, you can do that. Certainly you can have all kinds of personal property that's not attached to any parcel. because you would, in reality. You can see payments here. Let me go back a year. Okay. The reason I'm doing that is because in this database, the assessor's year hasn't had a bill calculated yet. So in the current year on this system, we're in the assessor year. If I go back a year, I can actually see the collector's year. So I can see...
You're on the assessor side there now?
Actually, I'm still in inquiry, but it defaults to the assessor year. In your office, it will default to your year. In the assessor's office, it defaults to their year. They can scroll back and see your year, and you can scroll forward and see their year if you want, if you guys want to set it up security that way. But for each office, so if you have people coming into your office and you've got a public view station set up, we want to set it up so that it defaults to your year, because when they come to the collector's office, they want to know tax billing information. And for the upcoming year, there isn't any tax billing information yet, so it would make sense to default to your current year.
But if you've got your ACH information stuff in there, you had it in the inquiry on the assessor side?
And you can view it on the inquiry in your side, because if you click on, if you're in 2008 and you look at your ACH stuff, you're going to see what you have for this year. You can scroll forward into the new year. And we can set that default to whichever year you want. So if you have a lot of ACH people, then I would probably set it to your default year. Just depends on what they come to your office to look for.
Security's my question there.
Okay. Well, it's driven by you. You tell us what other people in other offices can view and what the people in your office can view. And it's driven by your individual login in the morning. So behind the scenes, there's a whole system maintenance.
So all the security is login-based, basically.
Correct.
Okay.
And the login, while we're talking about, let's just look at it. Okay. 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 The cool user here. Each one of the users on the system is going to have their own login. That login can be the same login as that you use to log into Windows in the morning, or it can be different.
Okay.
If it's the same, once you double-click on an executable, it automatically opens. We set up so that when you can see each person here has their own login information.
Is it Windows authentication or something?
Correct.
Right.
If this matches their Windows login and password, it goes right into the DevNet apps. If it doesn't, then you saw me trying to jump through that interim layer of security. That's what you would see every time you want to go into the DevNet apps. Each user is going to have a login name and password in this list. And each user is going to have a series of checkpoints. Each one of the systems, whether it be admin, county collection, redemption, master receipting, mobile homes, personal property, inquiry, each one of these has its own set of checkpoints. So if a particular user touches multiple pieces of different office functionality, you would load up all the checkpoints for that system and then mark them either yes or no. Does this person, can they edit it? Can they view it? Can they change it? So it could be a multitude of questions. And you'll see a lot of things here. Can I access it? Number one, yes or no. Can I activate? Can I add? Can I approve? Can I change? Delete? Edit? All of those functions that you see here, a lot of times would be set no for someone that's not in your office.
And who would be able to get to set that?
Whoever has system administrator rights would be the person to set this up. And so what we normally do is we suggest that you have one system administrator somewhere in the county, whoever that be, and maybe a backup system administrator, so in case something happens to that person.
Probably IT, because they're, okay. And then the IT would work with each elected official based off their employees.
And then I would suggest that someone have a master list of all the usernames and logins, and that you work with that person to figure out, okay, here's a list of all the checkpoints. What do you want Julie to be able to do? What do I want Gary to be able to do? What do I want Sheila to be able to do? And somebody at the department head or someone you designate in each office would work with Gary to get this set up once. And once you do that, then you're done. You can have people out here that are inactive. notice you've got an active and inactive. So if you hire temporary help during your busy collection time every year, and it's the same person, you may hire them again year after year. You would leave them out here, just make them not active. That way you don't have to go through this whole process again. You can also create a template user, if you will. The assessor's office, most people are going to have the same rights. I want to go out and create one. Then I want to copy the checkpoints from Gary to Julie so that I don't have to go through this long list and set them yes or no. Okay? And whoever wants access to it, they don't even have to be somebody who uses this on a daily basis, but it may be in another office like zoning or building permitting or recorder or a lot of people can look at this data and never edit a thing. Okay? And our pricing is enterprise-wide, so we don't care how many, as long as it's somebody in the county, a county employee, as long as you're not giving other people access to it to edit. We don't care who you give it to. Okay? So that's pretty much inquiry, and again, here's the tax payments for personal property. Here's an example of a copy of the assess list for personal property. We do generate these out of the system. We'll reproduce them to be whatever you like. We customize the tax bill for each jurisdiction, the property record card, all the output, the personal property assessment list, the change of assessment notices. Most of them are editable by you. So if you want to go in and create your own forms that has the county logo on it and, you know, James's picture or Sheila's picture, you can do that. So what you see here is just an example of a form that we generate out of our system, all the line work that you see, so that no matter what printer you print it on, it looks perfect. You don't have to try to fill in the blank. And they print a duplex printed form. So I think what I gave you in your packet is an example of that. I think I printed it on two pages and stapled them together, their assess list. But they duplex print it front and back. Also, images can be attached here. So, we have the OCR scanning for the assess lists. So when the assess lists are mailed, and they're generated by our system, and they come back, they can load those in a scanner, OCR scan the barcode that's on the assess list, creates an image like this. This one was done in a demo earlier. It auto-attaches the image of the returned assess list with their information here. When I go into maintenance, I can detach any one of these tabs and move it over to a second screen. So if I want to OCR scan the assess list and then scrape the image of the assess list off to a second monitor, I can have the actual maintenance screen for personal property side by side with the returned assess list so that I can go in and do what I need to do. So that's where this image of the assess list came from. It came from the OCR scanning. Okay.
Your personal property, you close your book and say you're assessing someone for your property never assigned to that customer. And so they didn't fill out a form and you're trying to assess them this year. What number do you use?
Well, most of our people auto assign, have the system auto assign a number. You can key in whatever you're talking about, the number of the correction or the personal property account.
Personal number that you're known by.
Yeah. Again, it's like parcel numbering. We can set it up. It's a switch. We can set it up to auto number. Every time you click add a personal property account, it will just increment to the next available number.
It won't keep the same number that customer all the time.
The same customer, the same account number is going to stay that same account number year after year after year as long as they're still valid. As long as it's still valid.
Regardless of when they're assessed.
Regardless of when they're assessed.
So it's not going to auto add later in the year. It's just going
So once you give that account a number, either the system assigns a number or you assign a number, that account stays with that number until that account is retired by you or something happens and that account is no longer valid. You're welcome. Okay, so that's the inquiry. Let's go in just real quick here to the assessor maintenance. What's different about the maintenance is that you can go in and do the same inquiry. You see a couple of things you can do here. I've got some icons at the top. I can search, but I can also find. If I know the parcel number, I'm on the phone with the taxpayer, they give me their number, I can key it in here, and it jumps right to their parcel. if I don't know their parcel number, and that happens a lot. I'm going to search for Mr. Thettinger because I know he's out here. And again, this looks just like inquiry. It is the same version. It's all the same. The front end of this looks the same, except now I'm in assessor maintenance. And when I go into billing and collection and I search, same window. So everybody's using the same inquiry. It's one database. Okay, so now I'm back here. I'm in assessor maintenance. Don't want to confuse you by jumping around. But if I wanted to, I could do a personal property search and a name search. I could do all of these combined if I want. I'm just going to bring him up here. And here he is. He's only got one parcel. I'm going to double click on it. Now I'm actually in parcel maintenance. What's different is the tabs may look exactly the same, but now I can edit those tabs if I have the right security to edit them. What's coming up here is the disclaimer from Buchanan County's website because I have their World Wide Web attachment here. So when you go to the www tab, you can have multiple URLs bookmarked on a parcel. So I could have Realtor, I've got Realtor.com here, I've got Bing Maps, I could have the county's GIS, which is exactly what I'm showing you here. So their county GIS is on the web, it's available. What we do is we call the parcel number as part of what gets brought up when you do the search here. So I've attached their web address, their URL, to this parcel, and then when we bring up the parcel, it auto-attaches the parcel number. And here is that parcel. So I can view it with no external, nothing required if your maps are available online. We could also add this tab to what I call the parcel transfer process. There's a special portion of the software which allows you to go in and transfer ownership of properties. If all you're going to do is change the name, you may not use the transfer process, but if you're doing splits or combinations of properties, you're probably going to use the transfer process. And this www tab can be added to the transfer process so that whatever you've done in your maps, you'll be able to see immediately on the tabs from within the transfer process itself. So their disclaimer came up first, and we would probably either disable that or, you know, I just wanted you to see that their disclaimer was there. Now when I go into maintenance, let's see if I have other images here. Okay, I can see that I have images here and I can bring them in and we categorize these images. You can call them whatever you like. If you've got field data out, field people out doing collection for building permits, for example, we could have building permit or inspection photographs. You could have your nuisance photographs. Somebody goes out and takes a picture of the weeds are too tall, the vehicles haven't been moved, whatever that might be. You can create categories within this list, and then when you attach photographs out of your parcel or out of your photo, when you bring the pictures in and download them somewhere into a file, you can have this system point to that file and say, I want these to be my building permit issued ones, these to be my parcel photographs, these to be my scanned records. Scanned records are any kind of paper that you may want to scan and attach. Some of our processes create for you a PDF of that form. Change notices are a good example of that. So the assessor doesn't have to scan that or keep a paper record of it around somewhere. One of the options they have when they generate the change notices is to auto-create the PDF. If they choose that option, it auto-attaches that PDF as an image to the appropriate parcel. So now not only can they view the tax bill online, and the personal property bill online, but they can view the change notice online as an image. So here I've got parcel photographs. I could import pictures here. So if I click on import, I have a point to my picture file. I can bring up I can look at each one of these and say, well, none of those look like this house, so I don't think I've got the right ones here. But here's a scanned document, for example. Somebody went out and scanned a deed. And it's a simple matter of just double-clicking on it and attaching it. What I should have done was change the category here to be scanned records before I did that. but I just wanted you to see it's very easy to attach a scanned image to a parcel. That scanned image may be an old paper property record card. So we have a lot of clients that are systematically going through their drawers, scanning their paper property record cards, and getting them out of their file cabinets. Let's see. Here's property characteristics. We didn't see that in inquiry, so this is the zoning information. And again, if there have been violations, variances, most of that goes into zoning information. There's a whole setup for the zoning behind the scenes. The property record card is also here. And again, this card gets customized by each jurisdiction. This is the front of the card. You'll notice I see page 1 of 2. I can scroll to the next one. That'll be the back side of the card. I think I gave you, what, 2 or 3 examples in your folder of different cards.
If you have more sharpness than you can get on one card, is it good? Did you keep it going 8, 9, 10, 11, 12?
Yes.
It'll start over at 1, part,
yes.
Part 1, part 2.
Okay. What we've got here is somebody, I think it's all, I don't think there's a house attached to this parcel. I've got residential external buildings. Here's a detached garage, a utility shed, and a pool. Those four things, 1, 2, 3, 4, are noted on their grid, but not sketched here. Some people don't sketch their external structures. Some people do. So on the property record cards that I gave you, do you guys have one that's got the white house, looks like multi-level in the front, that's got trees blocking the view?
Yes,
this
in
one?
Our packet.
Okay, if you go to the second page of the card, notice that it has multiple structures, I mean a lot of structures. And you can see it's got barns and sheds and patios and decks. And this is the Hunnicutt card. So you'll see the whole point system as it walks through the value. The second page of that then are multiples. So you see here's more sheds and so forth on a different sketch. And then the last page is what you were talking about, Greg, where you've got, Gary, where you've got multiple structures that won't fit. So here's another, here's just an example of just a synopsis card, which people, everybody's different how much detail they want to give to the taxpayer. Some people don't want to hand out this whole back page of the card. So for some people, we've created what I would call the public view card, if you will, or a parcel report. That's just some basic information about the houses and so forth, but it doesn't give you all this detail because a lot of times they don't understand what this is anyway. So that's what this one has, multiple pages. The second one with the little white house on the back, that's a little more straightforward. That's just one house. So you can see what the sketch looks like, and then where the calculation is down at the bottom in the box where it says building number 1 is residential house, D-class, number of units, number of construction units, so on and so on. And then on the third card I gave you, on the second page, this is a sketch and a calculation from our manual. So it looks different to you because it's not the Hunnicutt point system. This is more, you know, you go to a cost table that says 1,000 square feet is X amount, $60,500. It drops in that value in a calculation ladder over on the right, so you see dwelling computations clear to the right of the card. One story, 1180 square feet, $70,890 is the value. And then you just walk down the calculation ladder the same way you would on the property record card and see what the bottom line value is after depreciation. The third page of this card is the Marshall and Swift residential card. So you can see what a Marshall and Swift card looks like in case you would decide to use the Marshall and Swift cost manual.
Did your program include the cost for the updates to Marshall and Swift?
Actually, we have an agreement with Marshall and Swift. They're very particular about how you use their cost tables. It's their intellectual property, and you have to license that through them. We license their black box. So when you use our software and pay us to use Marshall and Swift, you're actually paying to use the Marshall and Swift black box. which has been embedded into our software. So when you go into like Marshall and Swift commercial cost and add cost here, you're going to look at it on DevNet's front end. When we press save appraisal, it goes out to the black box. It calculates it out of Marshall and Swift, which the users cannot touch those tables. And anybody that tells you they can is not licensed through Marshall and Swift, okay? I can tell you that from dealing with Marshall and Swift, that it's their intellectual property, they've got it locked down. So we wanted to, when we first started this, do what we knew some of our competitors were doing, and that is take the Marshall manual and key their numbers into our costing structure. And that was a big no, no, no. So when you use Marshall and Swift in our software, you cannot edit the Marshall and Swift tables. In any way, shape, or form, you can't even get to the cost tables. You can't reprint them, you can't view them, period. The quarterly updates come as part of the price that you pay us. So we'll send you an end user agreement, you sign that end user agreement, the agreement then is between us and Marshall and Swift. And you pay us, we pay them. Okay? And our pricing, if you choose to do that, I can give you a price for residential, commercial, and ag. Those are separate prices per improved parcel is what they want to know. Every year, how many improved parcels do you have? And that's how we base the price. The users, however, can edit things after the fact. What neighborhood is it in? The quality, you know, the year built, they can adjust the age, they can use different types of depreciation. So there are things they can do to adjust the whole, but what they can't do is edit the tables themselves. Okay? We talked a little bit about land costs. You can have multiples of different types. Probably one of the more important things here is that you can run a comparable search on a parcel. So if I want to run a comp search, I can say, let's say somebody comes in with the three approaches to value appraisal to the appeal board. And they say, I think my value is too high based upon everybody else has sold in the neighborhood. And here's my appraisal to prove I'm right. So you're going to go into our system and you're going to run a comp search. Residential, on sales, fee appraisal, which is what they would do. This house has a primary two-story house. I'm going to say okay here. I didn't try running this before I came, you guys, so I hope this works. Okay, so it brings in information about your subject property. That's this house that I'm going to run my comp search on. Okay, so you can see the information that's on my house. If I scroll over here. I should have some tabs. Now I can drill down into the data. How do I want to generate comps? Are they complaining about value? Well, then let's do a value. Let's do a value range from X to Y. Is it size? I want to look for all the sales that have sold in the 1,000 to 1,500 square feet, year built, only 2001 to 2005. You can drill down into the data as tightly as you want to. By neighborhood, by property type. I just want to look for condos, duplexes, hotels. Township is not really important to Missouri. Tax code is important to you. Maybe I want to look at all the ones that are in the same set of taxing districts. Somehow that may affect value. Certain subdivisions, certain classifications, certain design attributes. I want to look for just the double wides, just the 2.5 stories, just the ones with swimming pools. I didn't choose anything. Let's see what it generates for comps. Okay, so what it comes back with is a list of all the parcels that met the criteria I said, 566 parcels, because I didn't drill down into it at all. I can select, I can deselect. If I've got something with no sale price, that means I've got garbage data. I don't want those in there. So I'm not even going to use those as comps. Oh, okay. It thinks I'm trying to select my comps. I don't want to do that. Okay. So I can exclude the ones I don't want. Now I can say, okay, what do I want to compare? quality, size, age maybe, and run multiple regression across it. And now it's going to tell me what is most comparable. And I don't like any of these, but I'm just going to show you how this works. So I'm going to choose the three that I want to compare it with and show you what you get as a result. You get a form that looks a lot like Fannie Mae. This is what they're going to bring to you. You're going to run this out of your data and go, okay, well, according to our comp search, your value should be closer to $625,000. And so that's a way for the assessor to use market sales to come up with value. That's something you guys could run as if you're interested in being able to do that. Okay. Questions about the assessor's portion of it? We didn't really talk about sketching. Maybe I should show you how this works. This is APEX. And I don't know if you're familiar with APEX, but it's an industry standard sketch tool. Like Marshall and Swift, we decided not to reinvent the wheel. So depending on which cost manual you're using, those are the attributes you'll see come up. If you're using Honeycutt, you'll see the Honeycutt manual. If you're using Marshall and Swift, you'll see the Marshall and Swift manual. If you're using a combination, you'll see a combination. So I can go into Honeycutt and I can say this is residential. It's a two-story house. Now I've got some options when I draw. I'm not a drawing wizard, but basically you can drop in all kinds of things. I can do rectangles, I can do circles, I can do angles, I can copy things, clone areas, move things around. It auto-calculates the square footage for me. I can go in again and say, okay, this is Honeycutt. Now I've got an attached garage. It's a garage unfinished. And I can, again, rectangle if I choose and say, okay, here's my garage. Okay, you get the idea. I'm going to save this sketch. We resave the sketch as a JPEG. The JPEG is what gets displayed on the property record card, online, and everywhere else so that people cannot edit your original sketch. The vector string file is out there, and if I would open this up again by clicking Edit Sketch, it's going to reopen that vector string file. But in the meantime, you're viewing a JPEG here, and when you go out now to the property record card, you would see that same JPEG. Now I'm going to go to building cost and add that structure. So I just added a two-story with a garage, residential, Class D. I can change that if I want. This all comes out of your Honeycutt manual. So I've got a base area, drop that in for me. I don't have to key any of this in. It knows it's two-story. If I need to put a building code on it, I can do that. The year built, it's going to default to this year. You can flag it as new construction. Then it gets put in the new construction bucket when we gather up the forms that you need to run. Drops in everything you need here. Now you can walk your way through the tabs and change whatever needs to be changed. I can save appraisal. It's calculated value, or it should. It's what it would do if I'd gone through and given it all of its units here. How many are plumbing, electrical, loads up the standards, and so on. So this is all driven by which manual you're using.
Okay. You can add addition to that structure?
You can add, absolutely. As long as you're not using Marshall and Swift, you can edit every table in the place. It's only Marshall and Swift that doesn't let you change. So if you guys have garden tubs or jacuzzi pools or, you know, whatever that may be unique to your area that isn't in the basic cost tables, you can simply go into that table, add another entry for it. Then when you go into your unit adjustment or whatever, you'll see on this list an addition for extra plumbing or something like that. If you've got specialized decks or porches or patios or things that are unique to you, it's worth the time to go into those tables and add them. Land, as far as land values are concerned, we've got the standard 4-3-2-1 rule for depth tables, 65-35 for triangular shape, calculates all the irregular lots. You can value them by square foot, front foot, acre, site. We've got studies that you can run to calculate what the rate should be based upon sales. So I want to go into all my vacant land sales in Jim's subdivision and I want to know how much the per front foot price would be in this neighborhood, what's my square foot price, then I can apply those on a mass basis if I want to. That's what your neighborhoods are for. So it helps you define like properties that you want to treat in the same manner on a mass basis.
Can you use the depth factor to calculate all that?
Depth factors can be used to calculate that if you choose to use that method, absolutely. And then once you've got that figured out, when you go to add land, now it's going to drop in things like, this is in neighborhood A. I calculated a rate per square foot in neighborhood A of $100. It would drop in the unit price for me. So if I keyed in a frontage here of, and a depth of, it calculates the square footage for me. If I've already done that calculation out of the sales ratio study and it says that the unit price is 100, now I've got $150,000 appraised value on my lot. If it was one of those where I'm doing frontage, now I've got the 4-3-2-1. If it's irregular or there's something else about it that's odd, I can say, okay, well, it needs to be 65-35 rule, or I just want to calculate this on straight acres. I can put in frontage and width. It's going to calculate acres for me, and I'm going to know that 0.03 is calculated. You can track the deeded acres. Sometimes they're not the same. Okay? So you can have multiples. And you can have multiple land areas valued on the same parcel. My primary land, it's commercial. My primary land on the street, 100 feet off the street, that has a rate of $5,000 a front foot. Everything beyond that is excess land, and I'm going to price that on a square footage basis at $50 a square. So you're unlimited to the number of entries you can have for land. Anything about the assessor's real estate part that we didn't talk about that you want to know? You're the guy who had a timeline. Do you have questions that you... Am I doing okay?
Oh, yeah. I'm asking as we go along.
Okay.
So.
All right. Finding a parcel from here, you can just click find. Let's say that you get into a parcel and you know that this parcel needs to be retired. From here, you can retire a parcel. Do I want to retire it? Yes, I do. I believe it's going to ask me what year I want to retire it for. So I can say I want to retire it for next year. Then when you roll over and set up for next year, it auto-retires the parcel. So for today, it's still active. Next year, it's retired. Still in the database.
Still in multiple years in the future?
You can do multiple years in the future. It's going to say retired up here in red. And when you go in and look at it, you'll be able to view your retired parcels until the year that they roll off. Then when I scroll back through history, I can find that parcel again. So it's always out there. It's never gone. It's not deleted. From within a parcel, I can delete names. So if I get the wrong name on a parcel, I have the option to delete the name off. It's not deleting it out of the name pool. Something else that we do is we reuse names over and over. So you may see on a parcel that this name is associated with two parcel entries. When I go in then to change their mailing address on this one, it's also going to change it on the other one. So if I've got First American and they send me a new address update and I change it on one parcel and I've got that same name record reused and attached to 50 other parcels or 5,000 other parcels, it'll change them all at the same time. So we encourage people to use the name pool. What's nice about that is somebody's not typing it in a different way than someone else. So if I've got an abbreviation out there for First National Bank, I know everybody's using the same name record. So when I go to search, I can find it. If you want to separate husband and wife names, you can do that too. That way if something happens to him and you want to search for her separate from him, you can. So how much detail you want to get into in names is up to you. Okay, again, here's the inquiry for billing and collection. You know what, Jim? Something I forgot. My apologies.
As she's logging in, guys, is there some specifics that we haven't covered that as we go through this, I mean, is there questions you guys are asking as you go along, or Tim, Gary, anything?
Nope. All I got is me because I got over the court order section yet.
I want to...
What section? The court order?
Court order section.
Court order section.
Uh-huh. Julie, excuse me. I want to slip out.
Uh-huh. Is my... There's a feature that I want to show you in the inquiry. Okay. Something that I didn't show you before that I do want to show you. When you do a search and you bring up a parcel, you can print the results of this list. So let's say that you're in doing a search for someone, like the highway department comes in and they want to widen 54 or something. And they come in and they say to you, I need to know all the people who own property along this corridor. You do a search and you bring up a list. You can print the results of this list.
Okay.
That's one thing you can do. This is standard Windows functionality, so anytime you generate something to print, you've got options as to what to do with it. You can print it to a file, to text, to HTML. You can. There are some other things that you can do here. You can just burn it down onto a CD. You can email it to people if you want to. Whatever you want to do with this, all the output here, exporting reports, is an option in a lot of places. Also,
you were looking at a size address there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. But I could have shown owner address, I could have shown site address, I should could have shown detail and bring up.
What was your question, Gary?
If you're looking along a corridor,
right.
You would want to know by site address.
Exactly. Address. And so if I'd have clicked on site address, that's the what I would have seen on my list. Okay? And here it's asking me, do I want to show history and exemptions, because I'm going to show you the parcel report here. Here's an example of what I was looking for. So here's a parcel information report that can be generated right out of that inquiry. You didn't have to go into the application at all. This can be customized as to what data you want to show and how much information you want to show here. So the fields that you see, net selling price, the sales history, the parcel notes, that was all things that clients asked for. Okay, so that is what I have open. So, again, this can be customized by each jurisdiction. You tell us what you want to show on your parcel information report. Okay.
Court orders.
Let's do that before we go into billing and collection, because you need to see that before we go into billing and collection. They begin in the assessor's office or the board of revision, in most places anyway. That was, by the way, the time memo that came up to nag me. It comes up to nag me every day. It's just a nagging message. Okay. So let's see. I wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything else before we talk. Oh, the sales ratio studies? We do. The sales to the state, the export report to them, all done. The index studies can be done out of the system. You can do it by building. You can do it by land. You can do it by land residual, building residual. Indexes can be calculated out of the system and applied on a mass basis by neighborhood, by subdivision, by county, however you want to run the index studies. The sales, when you go into the, I was just looking at sales here, just thinking about sales. When you go into the sales window itself and you add sales, it's all tied to document number. Pops open a sale window for you. You can have multiple parcels on the same sale record. So a document may contain more than one parcel. It's going to sum the prior year land and the prior year building for all of the parcels that you attach to the sale record and give you one sales ratio for prior year. We'll also calculate a current year sales ratio. So if it's a brand new subdivision and you're having sales in it already, and you want to see how close am I coming in my cost to what they're actually selling for, I can do that. If you're using our recorder system, the grantor and grantee can be pulled in. They're linked by document number. So when you would attach this document number to the sale record, it would auto-populate grantor and grantee. Once you've entered the information here, then we do the sale letters. Some of our jurisdictions send them to both, grantor and grantee. Who sold it? Who bought it? Some of them just send it to the buyer. You can send it to whomever you like. And then when they get those back, they actually come in here and put in what the net selling price was. Because in Illinois and a lot of our other states, we're disclosure. We know what they paid for it. Here, you don't know what you paid for it. So some people put in the net selling price, and you can also add these by the reported construction cost. So there are two different ways you can manage your sales information out of our system. We generate those letters for you, the sale letters. Okay. Court orders. Corrections. Did I choose it or did I not choose it? Okay, so somebody comes in and they say, I've got an error. Let's see if I can. Find this one. Okay, don't have one. Good. Okay, just wanted to make sure I didn't already have one on that parcel. I can go in and look at any of these. These are already completed. I can go in and look at them, though. These are the court orders that have already been entered. So I had a name change here on this one. Let me go back and find one that is something besides that. Anything out here that's not complete. Okay, here's one where you can actually see what you edit. So I've got one here. This is what you do. You go into the detail and you say, what was wrong about this parcel? The value was wrong. I key in the corrected amount here. So my residential building shouldn't have been 5,400, it should have been 4,000. When I do that, it auto-calculates the difference and recalculates, here's their original tax due, here's their corrected tax due, here's the difference. This is done by whoever originates the certificate. I also do the same process in personal property. Somebody comes to the counter, bills are already out, I need to add a new account. I go in, add a new account, it calculates for me and then prorates it for me for the time that you say prorate. So based upon the date that it's due. If there's something that, the date that you created it and the date that it's due. Maybe this was in the wrong districts, or I need to add a district here, or I need to add a special district here. Something was missed. So these tabs allow you to edit whatever was wrong with the real estate and save this. I want to make sure I know this number. Will it let me copy this number. No. Okay. Okay. I'm going to jot this down. 06300.
Well, you're good. If you had another vehicle on personal property,
yep.
Maintain the original account number, or is it
going to do a new number? No, if you go in and edit an existing account, they didn't report a vehicle to you, but they already have an account. Mm-hmm. You can add that vehicle to an existing account and recalculate the bill. Let's say that they left the old vehicle on, but really that's not the vehicle they have anymore. Now I need to go in and remove a vehicle and change it to something else. You just take off the old vehicle, put on the new vehicle, save it, and just like this, it recalculates the amount due. So you'll see what the original amount due was, and you'll also see what the corrected amount due is and what the difference is here. This gets done either by for real estate, it gets done in the assessor's office because chances are that's where they're going to come. Mm-hmm. Vehicles can be done in either office. So if they come to the assessor's office and tell them, you can do it there. Or if they come to your office and you want to make the change, you can do it there. Either way. I can print a certificate from here, which shows this information, a synopsis of this information.
Create a document we would then take before the Board of Equalization?
Correct. And it has the signatures on it, and you know, you do whatever it is you need to do with it. I don't know where that went.
You make the change, and then you're creating the document to take before the Equalization?
Correct.
But we're not adjusting the tax
close one of these. Not yet.
Okay.
Okay. You just originate the information. That's it calculates the corrected amount due. Okay. What you need to do, though, is you need to go into billing and collection. Close this and process corrections. So what you're going to see on the collection side is a list of all the ones that have been entered up by the assessor's office or the Board of Appeals or whatever that are in an approved status. They've been approved, everything's signed off on, everything's ready to go. If this is the one that I want to do, and the last one I entered is this one that ends in 400, I'm going to say, yeah, and is it real estate or personal property? So you would see both here.
Right.
I can view personal property if I want to. I can view real estate. Mm-hmm. This is the one I want to post. Do I want to print a corrected bill as part of this process? Yes or no? If I do, then I check this on. I post the correction. Now it's going to go through the due amounts and correct the due amount. So what I said to you earlier, somebody comes to the counter, they've got their old bill in their hand. It was $1,500. Now I posted a correction, now it's $1,000. They come with their old bill and you scan the barcode. It's going to come up with the correct amount due in your collection window.
So it doesn't, we don't actually have to go in and delete the old bill, which is just, that would be so much easier.
And we keep a snapshot of the old bill, and we keep a snapshot of the new bill. So you can go back in and reprint either one you want. Okay. It doesn't like my printer. Okay. So what it's, somehow my PDF is not set up here the way it should be. I need to check that when I get back home. What it should do here is it should give you the option to print a corrected bill. And when you say current year, print corrected bills, it should just automatically print that corrected bill for you at the counter. Normally what I can do here is PDF that bill and you'd be able to see the corrected bill. All the corrected bills say corrected on them. So you'll know immediately when you go in and look at a bill, reprint, it's going to say corrected. And you'll know that that's where it came from. So this is the correction posting process as far as that's concerned. This side is your side. So what the assessor enters on their side, what the Board of Revision enters, doesn't change an amount due until you post it here. So that you can see what it is. You can go in and look at the corrections. We can set it up so that you have the ability to go in and look at corrections if you want before you post them. We have some people that do, and we have some people that don't care. On the collection side.
So you're delinquent bills, you're not adjusting the collectors until they accept that.
Correct.
And then so the document is there.
Correct. Thank you, Jim. Correct. Okay. So that's how corrections work. Okay, so here's personal property. Let us...
Just so you can shut down because you don't have a commission.
Okay.